For some, starting a family isn't easy. You meet your person, you made some commitments, and now comes the fun part, right? Well, not always.
Sometimes growing your family takes a little extra science, support, and a whole lot of success. You'll find that science, support, and success at RMA Fertility Centers. For over 20 years, RMA's innovative research, state-of-the-art fertility centers, and dedicated fertility specialists have helped bring more than 50,000 babies to loving homes across the United States and around the world.
With success rates above the national average, RMA is a destination for fertility care, and they're opening an office in our backyard, RMA Jersey City, coming this fall 2022. So go ahead, make an appointment today at rmanetwork.com.
That's rmanetwork.com.
Stop laughing, this is erotic.
I'm on a new medication and I think it's making me hallucinate.
I would have been a Ted Bundy victim.
Yeah, I had no idea that so many people out there felt the same way I did.
Now I want a pina colada.
An acquired taste.
This is an Acquired Taste podcast. I'm Kathleen Haney, I've been making a Sunday batch of low sugar compote. It's my new favorite tradition, and I'll be posting my recipe on Instagram this week, friend.
And I'm Bethany Watson, your untamed hair having, clothes unmatching. I have to switch to black iced tea because coffee is no longer cutting it, friend.
And every week, Bethany and I get together to discuss our lives, what's weird in the world, and we invite you to join us. This week, we're talking about
that one time in the mid-80s where a computer made by the BBC was a portal through time.
Come again? What?
There was a man and his roommates, and he and they claim that they spoke to a 16th century guy who used to live in their village, and it all happened through a BBC branded computer. And keep in mind, this was before the internet, so the computer was a completely closed system. Mm. No one was accessing it from outside, and we're going to talk about it.
Were special mushrooms involved here?
No, not that he said.
Okay, all right.
I don't know. What about you, Kathleen?
And this week, I am talking about the very important, very neglected topic, why are turtlenecks so sexy?
Oh, you're doing the hard-hitting research this week.
Well, I've been wearing turtlenecks recently. It's just, I have this thing where I have very sensitive neck. It needs to be covered, or I need to be wearing a thin scarf or something. Anyway.
Sure, you have to protect your instrument like a theater performer.
You know what? It's not incorrect. Anyway, Neil has been so horned up for me, and we both put our finger on it. It's the turtlenecks.
It's the turtlenecks.
A couple of times I've been wearing this one that I'm wearing right now, which is a paper thin, I guess you would call it an activity turtleneck from Fabletics, because I could do sports in it or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. You can do yoga, or you can, run a board meeting.
Exactly.
For your Apple products.
Double trouble. Also, I've been wearing this thick, chunky sweater that has a mock neck, and I've been catching him looking at me like, when your partner looks at you and they have that look on their face that they're so in love with you and you can tell.
Yeah. Totally. It's often the look that I do give my carafe of coffee, even though it's no longer keeping me awake.
So I've been getting this look from Neil, this love eyes look from Neil all week. And I'm like, what are you looking at? And he's like, I don't know. I think it's the turtlenecks.
So I'm excited to hear, because I do often feel like a more sophisticated person when I wear a turtleneck.
Yes.
Especially if it's black. I feel like an actress.
Yes.
Or an author. And I also feel very 70s, like a very chic, pulled together 70s lady.
Yes.
I like it.
Well, it's funny that you mention time periods and feeling powerful, because there's a whole psychology behind turtlenecks, and we're going to get into that.
That's incredible. Kathleen, can I talk to you about something that has been happening to me mentally, and no one will talk to me about it?
Okay, yeah, I'll talk to you about anything. You know that this is a no judgment zone.
I like Planet Fitness. They're also a no judgment zone, including they don't judge you if you wear jeans to the gym.
That's a farce, because Planet Fitness will ask you to leave if you make too many grunting noises.
They should. You shouldn't be making so many grunting noises. We all know you're strong. I cannot get over the music from the movie Encanto. And I know that I'm a late adopter. People were freaking out about this on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen the movie, and also I've only heard two songs, but I'm obsessed with those two songs, especially the song Surface Pressure,
okay,
sung by Jessica Darrow, and I feel like every eldest sister in a family needs to listen to that song, and it makes me cry because it makes me think about how much pressure my older sister must be under, and yet it's a total bop, and it's an upbeat, awesome song, and Dennis won't talk to me about it because he doesn't like Lin-Manuel Miranda or Disney, so it's like, who am I? And then I don't even see anyone else.
Dennis's hate for Lin-Manuel Miranda makes me laugh so hard.
I can't even bring him up in conversation. Dennis, I think it's the combination of, I think it's like a level of cheesy earnestness that drives him crazy.
The beauty of editing this show is that I get to jump in anytime on the microphone and defend myself. I do not hate Lin-Manuel Miranda. In fact, I think he's a very talented human being. I have the utmost respect for his musical ability. I just don't like Hamilton, and I don't like Broadway, and so, you know, it basically feels like sandpaper mixed with flesh-eating acid rubbing all over my skin when I hear the tones of that kind of singing. I am sorry, I apologize to everyone out there, but I do not hate or have disdain for Lin-Manuel Miranda, let the record show. And now, back to the show.
I feel that way about Guy Fieri. I can't.
But we're learning Guy Fieri is like one of the only good chefs out there who hasn't like attacked a lady.
Yeah, I know. I know. He's a family man. You know why he hasn't attacked a lady, Bethany? Because those ladies ain't going near him with his sunglasses like backwards, facing forward, sideways on the top of his head like he wears them. So stupid.
I think I saw an Onion headline that said Ray-Bans designs glasses to sit on the front of your head.
Okay, so let's talk about Encanto. It has been on my list for a while. I think maybe now you are the fire in my juggernaut of why I'm not getting to Encanto on my to-do list. So I'm excited. Where is it? So I can watch it on Disney Plus?
Disney Plus, which is why I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Because I don't have Disney Plus. But it's, you know, from what I've seen on Twitter, like the representation is so good. Okay. I think that post went viral of the little boy, the picture of the little boy, the moment that he realized that the boy in Encanto looks like him. Like they have the same hair and the same skin. And
I
like,
saw that. Yeah.
Wonderful moment. But the music is great. And I love it. And I love it. And I can't get the music out of my head. The two songs I've listened to. And like, I love the fact that we don't talk about Bruno, which someone said is basically this song about all of these people gossiping about a middle-aged man. That's the song that's become a huge hit, which is so funny.
Your sister has two kids. Are you telling me they aren't Disney Plus subscribers?
They have it. Yes. They got it last year, I think, for the girls for Christmas. And I texted my sister and I said, have you seen the movie? And she said, yes, we watched it. And then I didn't follow up because my feelings were so big, but I wanted to ask her if she felt seen by the song Surface Pressure.
Bethany, Venmo your sister $5 and get her password.
Yeah, I know. She's a rule follower. I don't know if she will be so dismissive of laws as to give me her Disney Plus password.
No, you could. It's a family account, so you're allowed to have different people on it.
Is that what works?
Yes, Bethany. Your sister is like my brother who, and my aunt and my uncle. Every time I'm like, please watch us on Netflix. Here's my password. I made you an account. They're like, no, the FBI is going to come and get us the second we turn this on.
Look, the last thing I need is to have the FBI on to all of my crimes. And then the thing that pushes them over is my Netflix sharing. Like, you know how, you know, someone will like attack a bunch of ladies and do awful things, but then they also don't file their taxes. And that's what they get arrested for, is because it's like one thing to do all the awful stuff, but it's another thing to not give the government their money. That's what they get them on.
Yeah, you leave behind one tiny like a centimeter of an eyebrow, and that's how you get caught. You get away with a huge money heist, and you just, an eyebrow randomly falls off your face, and that's how it all goes down.
When my eyebrows fall off my face, it's disgusting. It's just my whole face falls apart. Eyebrows really pull it all together.
What did you do your Wordle in today? How many tries?
Five. It took me five.
Okay.
It took me all five, but I did get it, and I'm very proud. Have you done it yet today?
No, I have not done it yet today, but are you aware that there is a website that has Wordle archives so you can go back and play the ones from the past?
Well, look at that. I did not know that.
Oh, my sister-in-law sent it to me this weekend, and she's like, just in case you thought you were going to be productive today, I am sorry. And then the link came.
I will give you one hint for the wordle of the day, Kathleen.
Okay, okay.
The first word I tried was fucks. And I got one letter correct, but in the wrong place.
I play the same first word every time.
What is it?
Heist.
Oh, that's a good word. Lots of,
yeah.
A good like mixture of vowels and consonants, which you could say about any word, I guess.
Yeah.
Because that's literally how English works.
Every single word in the English vocabulary. And then my second word is plum.
But is it always plum?
Always, yeah.
Even if it tells you that like you got the S in the right place or whatever?
Yes, because then it helps me eliminate letters. So I really never get anything higher than a third try.
Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
But one day, the word will be heist, and I will get it on the first fucking try, Bethany.
Kathleen, you are, when that happens, like somebody who plays the same lottery numbers all the time, you're going to look like a superstar. By the way, I'm sitting here looking at your Zoom screen, and you have your ring light behind you.
Yeah, yeah.
But all I see is the circle and a little bit of the stem, and then the rest of it is hidden by pillows. But from my angle, it just looks like the female symbol, so it looks like you bought giant wall art to symbolize how much you love ladies. And I really like it.
Speaking of wall art, after we were talking about wall art that with toxic positivity, we got a lot of hate from people who have wall art that's like, in this family, we are kind. We pray before dinner. We love one another endlessly. We got a lot of hate last episode.
You know what? You can, whatever makes you happy, put it in your home.
Yeah, yeah.
Not everyone would put a medieval mace on their wall. And yet it makes me happy, so I have it. You do whatever you want. We're just giving our opinions. Our opinions aren't always going to match yours, and that's okay.
Speaking of opinions that are important to me, you know how I'm like almost exclusively a champagne drinker?
Yes.
So stupid. I can't believe that you're so fancy. Even came out of my mouth. No, I like the Korbel, which is cheap. Okay.
Yeah.
Martha Stewart, queen of everything.
Yeah.
She says that we are all drinking our champagne incorrectly.
Now, I gulp mine while crying. Is that the right way to drink it or the wrong way?
I'm going to say that there... I don't want to put labels on your emotions, Bethany, because you're allowed to feel what you have to feel.
Thank you. Don't you shame me.
But when it comes to champagne, perhaps you shouldn't be gulping it because you're going to get the farts or the burps.
Oh, yeah. See, it doesn't matter because I'm usually crying, usually in the shower. So it's like I can down the champagne in two gulps.
So Martha Stewart says we should not be drinking sparkling wine / champagne out of flutes because we do not drink it fast enough and therefore it goes flat. The flute has too much volume. We should go back to drinking champagne and sparkling wine out of coupe glasses because they don't fit as much liquid, so you drink it faster and then the bubbles aren't just sitting there escaping.
So we should be drinking them out of the glasses that are shaped like Kate Moss's breasts?
Yes, yes, exactly. Those are the glasses we should be drinking champagne and sparkling wine exclusively out of.
You know why those glasses make me nervous?
Why?
Because they're so shallow that all I see is people spilling. They just make me feel like I'm going to spill. I like a champagne flute for beverages in general because you have a lot of, there's a lot of give, you know, the glass is so deep that even if you fill it like halfway, you're not going to spill that sucker unless you're super drunk.
Sometimes it's top heavy and it goes over quickly and you're like, ah,
that's true.
Do you know what I mean? Like the weight is more equally distributed, like pear shaped, like I am. I think I'm shaped like a coupe glass.
That sounds like a brag.
Hey, you gentle listener. I know you're busy. I'm busy too. Everybody is busy. And sometimes going to the drugstore to pick up your birth control is like, ah, what a pain. That is why Bethany and I are proud to partner with The Pill Club. The Pill Club offers birth control subscriptions prescribed by a medical professional, and it's all delivered straight to your door for free.
The Pill Club carries over 120 FDA-approved brands and ships to all 50 states. By the way, most brands of birth control are free with insurance or Medicaid. Otherwise, prices start as low as $7 per month without insurance. And because you have a neighbor who's always looking at your stuff to see what got delivered today, the Pill Club delivers birth control to your door for free in discreet packaging, along with fun self-care gifts and goodies.
What's more, their licensed medical team is just a text away to give you the best reproductive health care.
So sign up for birth control in just 5 minutes. Skip the office visit and waiting in line at the pharmacy and join the club. And right now, when you go to the thepillclub.com/taste. The Pill Club is offering a $10 donation to bedsider.org for every Acquired Taste listener who becomes a patient. Your donation will help low-income individuals get access to birth control through bedsider.org.
That's thepillclub.com/taste to get your first birth control care package and donate to help more women in need of affordable birth control. Remember, thepillclub.com/taste, and you must use this link to make the donation.
Bethany.
Kathleen.
How many turtlenecks do you own?
Two.
Uh-huh.
And they're both of the Steve Jobs variety, which is black.
Some might also call that the Michael Kors variety because he of two wears only black turtlenecks.
They're chic. They're, you know, Audrey Hepburn loved them for a reason.
So I think modern day society has forgotten exactly how sexy turtlenecks can be. You're talking about Steve Jobs and you're like, oh, it's a little nerdy. Sometimes you'll see a librarian in a TV show or a movie wearing that, you know, that white, bulky cotton turtleneck underneath a like a knitted cardigan and their lipstick is smeared halfway down their face. It's a trope and I don't like it.
Sure, it totally is. A bulky turtleneck with like the fleece vest over it.
Just thinking about that, though, sounds so cozy, doesn't it?
So cozy. So cozy.
I want tropes about turtlenecks to disappear into the void. MTSA. Make turtlenecks sexy again.
Okay. I think you're single-handedly doing it, Kathleen.
What are a few words that come to mind when you think of turtlenecks?
70s.
Yes.
I think of Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah.
In her all black with like her,
yes,
you know, short pants, turtleneck.
Yeah. From the movie Funny Face. And she does that dance that was in the Gap commercial.
Yes, that's the one. And then I think of Gloria Steinem.
Yes.
Because I think she wore them a lot.
Yeah. Bethany, you are spot on about these women. They're all in my notes talking about Audrey Hepburn and Gloria Steinem and the psychology of turtlenecks. Yes, you are spot on.
Really?
I associate turtlenecks with grace because it emphasizes necks. Like, I feel like when you wear a turtleneck, you hold your neck up a little bit higher.
You do because you're afraid it's giving you a double chin or making your face look too round.
I know. Like, and turtlenecks are more subtle, a more subtle type of sexy, especially when they're form-fitting. Because it's not like your bosom is out in the open and it's not really highlighting your badonkadonk.
No.
It's highlighting your neck. It's like a tasteful nude, right?
I heard a statistic once that I feel like someone made up and I also can't source it nor tell you when I heard it. But I heard once someone throw out that women who work, like servers who work at topless bars, make less in tips than servers who work at tastefully sexy bars. Because something about leaving stuff up to the imagination makes them more tantalizing and appealing. I don't know if that's true or not, but there is something to it. It's sexier to me to see a hint of boobs than to just see a breast in front of my face.
The one thing I can't stand about turtlenecks, though, is sometimes when there's the big cutout at the boob.
Like the teardrop?
Like you get this big like open window so you can see the cleavage, but you're still wearing a turtleneck. I'm like, what is the GG point of that? Because you're still cold.
But just in the teardrop area of your bosoms.
Okay, Bethany. So Lindsay Lenquist of StyleCaster.com, she really hit it. She hit it on the nail when she said, when you think of what you're going to wear on a date, tight dresses, push-up bras, figure-hugging jeans, these are what we think of when we think of date night looks.
Yeah.
But in a quest to achieve such a straightforward sensuality, we neglect our body's subtlest, most elegant offerings. No piece of clothing manages to cater to both of these audiences to highlight the obvious and not so obvious assets alike more than a masterful turtleneck.
Wow. So does she elaborate?
Yes, she says anyone who's worn a turtleneck knows the piece of clothing is a great few things. One, it is useful if you're cold.
Yes, of course. It covers everything.
Two, it is flattering for any figure.
Yes, agreed.
And three, it draws the viewer's attention to the neck.
To the neck and to the boobs.
And she goes on to say, few shirts in her closet make her boobs look as great as her go-to turtleneck, and none make my neck look more graceful.
I wonder if it's because it is all one sleek piece. Like, I personally am not a huge fan of capri pants because they cut the leg off at a strange place. Mm-hmm. And when something is all one color or all one silhouette, it yeah. makes it look longer. It makes it sleeker.
Yes.
And I think that's why it's like your whole neck, all of your arms, your tit heads and your stomach are all like one flowing piece of architecture that mm-hmm. doesn't have cut-ups. There's nothing like confusing the line so the eye can just sort of freely roam all over the place.
Okay, going back to that thing you said about topless bars versus sexy bars where the women are covered up.
Yeah.
Think about a cocktail server with like a short skirt. But tights on underneath that skirt mm-hmm. and then a form-fitting turtleneck serving you your drink. There is something so mysterious about that person. Mm-hmm. I definitely see why you get more tips. Okay, but also, is it that people who wear turtlenecks are, I don't know, they look smarter and you're like, who is this person? I want to have a very intellectual conversation with them.
And like, to be fair, I don't think uh-huh. that statistic that I entirely may have made up
yeah.
was talking uh-huh. about like boobs versus a turtleneck. I would love to work. I would love to work at a cocktail bar that was sexy, that the dress code was a turtleneck, because God bless it. But your point is made. Like, I think there's something yeah. about a turtleneck that says, I don't feel like I need to show you everything.
Yeah,
it's not your business. You have to mm-hmm. earn everything that's underneath this. Uh-huh. And, you know, I'm going to dress for me. And yeah, and yes. I think it does show a little bit of intellectualism, whether or not that's yeah. warranted, because a long line of smart people have worn turtlenecks. George yeah. Washington probably wore turtlenecks.
Okay, I'm going to get into the history in a second, but... Hey, Neil, come here for a sec.
Neil came on our live Patreon show last week, and everyone freaked out. Everyone loves Neil.
Where is he? Hey, you, come here.
Is he?
Yeah, come here. Your presence on the pod is requested.
Is that a man?
It's
Hi,
man.
Neil.
What is it about me a turtleneck that turns you on?
I don't know.
You're going to have no to figure idea. It out.
But yeah, this I is, can't. Use your words, hon. This is a podcast.
Yeah.
That's... But it's that's the honest truth, though, is that I don't know. It's that you're in the turtleneck, and I like it. I don't know why. I'm not gonna.
But can you dig a little bit deeper? Like, what if, like, if you look at her now, she's in the turtleneck. It's weird because you guys are sharing the same earbuds, so you're super close.
Yes.
But, like, is there is there something about the shape of it or about the, like, the one piece of fabric about it or the way that it hugs her curves?
There's that. I do uh-huh. like that. Uh-huh. The curve-hugging thing is always something I'm going to enjoy.
You but, like the yeah. way my boobs look right now?
I love the way your boobs look, but I like that all the time, the way that your boobs mm-hmm. look. I mm-hmm. think it might be more of just how you... I don't think it's the turtleneck. I think it's you. I think that you sort of, like, sit a little more straight and, like, walk a little more oh. straight when you're wearing the turtleneck. Oh. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Maybe it's an optical illusion. It okay. could be.
Okay.
Okay.
I like so it. Thanks for your input.
No problem.
Thanks, Neil.
Have a nice day.
Goodbye.
You too.
See ya.
It's how you carry yourself. That's how it makes you feel.
That's interesting, Bethany. Yes.
Yeah.
It's how, I guess it's how I carry myself.
It's why, like, you know, feeling comfortable is great and looking casual is great, but sometimes it's fun to get dressed up because you totally carry yourself differently.
You do. Well, I gotta tell you, before turtlenecks were worn for fashion, they originated in the 15th century, designed as a way for knights to protect their necks wearing chains on their necks.
That makes total sense, because as anyone who's ever worn like a metal wristwatch band, it catches yeah. all the hair on your arms and it hurts. Chainmail probably pulled at the chest hair
yeah.
quite a bit.
Yeah, but it also protect their necks from being sliced off.
Totally. Oh, that's so interesting.
So then the royals were like, hey, you knights look pretty regal in your metal turtlenecks. Let's, you know, adopt this style for us. Specifically, Queen Elizabeth in the 15th century, at that time when she was like, hey, I'm going to wear turtlenecks just like the knights. They were very heavily ruffled. You
yeah.
know, they're very voluminous. When you see painting representations of royals at that time, it was very dramatic. And I guess it became associated with wealth. So if you were wearing a turtleneck, you were wealthy. Also, I read that part of the history of turtlenecks is that they were a terrific way to hide any skin conditions that may pop up on the neck.
If you have a bad case of the hickey, if you have, you know, yeah. syphilis of the neck,
or if you ringworm have
ringworm, if you have ugly neck, yes, all of those really dangerous syndromes can be hidden up.
And much like the wealth of any nation, turtlenecks trickled down to the mere common folk, and they started to wear turtlenecks. Sailors and blue-collar workers, the working class, and then in the 1860s, English polo players started wearing this as like what reputable athlete of the sport of polo would wear. And
sure,
that is why in Britain they call turtlenecks polo necks.
Oh, interesting. What do they call what we call polo shirts?
It's a polo neck and then a polo shirt. Do you see the difference?
Yes, I do see the difference. One is a turtleneck and one is a shirt.
And then in America in the late 1880s to the 1920s, there was this fictional character named the Gibson Girl. The Gibson Girl was kind of like the overall personality and image of what a visually ideal woman would look like.
Oh.
So the Gibson Girl to the 1880s to the 1920s is what the Girl Next Door was to the 1990s. And Gibson girls loved turtlenecks.
Well, I mean, what's not to love?
They love turtlenecks. And so women were like, I want to be a Gibson Girl. I'm going to wear turtlenecks. And then turtlenecks became even more popular with the beatnik era, which is the end of the 40s, the beginning of the 50s. Beatniks always were like too cool for school. I mostly associate beatnik with Doug Funny's older sister. What was her name? Judy.
I don't know who Doug Funny is. Who's that?
You never watched a cartoon Doug?
Oh, yeah, Doug. Was his last name Funny?
Yeah, Doug Funny.
Oh, man.
Do you know, you didn't remember that?
No, I remember Tommy Pickles, but that's Rugrats.
That's Rugrats. So when you think of a beatnik, Bethany, someone who dresses like a beatnik, I don't want to get into the politics of it. What do you think of?
I think of like Andy Warhol.
Yeah.
Like artists, berets, dark circular glasses, lots of pot smoking, lots of snapping instead of clapping.
Sort of like a minimalist look, right?
Yeah.
It was like very sleek, very streamlined. You either wore like bell bottoms with your turtleneck or I want to say the girls looked a lot like who is the less attractive in the Scooby-Doo? You know, consider the less attractive one.
Oh, poor Velma.
Yeah, Velma, you know, with the pleated skirt and the turtleneck.
Yeah.
So turtlenecks then took on their own sort of like, I think that's where we get the intellectual component of a turtleneck from the beatnik era.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, because it was like, it wasn't just a piece of clothing. It was like a whole ideology behind it.
Exactly. I am smart. I am learned. I am turtleneck.
I am turtleneck.
I was actually looking through on allthat'sinteresting.com/beatniks-New York. /beatniks-new-New York or something like that, whatever. I'll link it in the show notes. There's a really good photo gallery there of pictures from the 1950s of beatnik culture. And Bethany, ooh, I want to date every single guy that's in these photos. They all look like Jack Antonoff, every single one of them.
You know, I have such a thing for men's fashion in the 70s.
Huh. Tell me why.
Turtlenecks. Yeah. Long bell bottoms, sleek lines, figure hugging. Like I think everyone looked better dressed in the 70s. Like everything was form, but like it also worked with curves. And so bell bottoms kind of worked with curves and it gave you like a fun shape. And like turtlenecks hugged everything. Your waist looked real nice.
Yeah.
Guys look wearing like longer suit jackets that were more form fitting and hugged everything. I just think the 70s were like just the aesthetic ideal.
Speaking of fashion, have you ever heard the term twee style?
I've heard the term twee.
Yes.
I don't know of it in relation to style.
Twee style is coming back. And I think turtlenecks are a big part of twee style too. So twee style basically is that like vintage inspired Zooey Deschanel-esque style that was very popular in America between 2008 and 2015-ish. It was like girls that dressed like little girls, but as grown women. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay, totally.
I was very into the twee style. I had a lot of skirts, had a lot of cardigans with details like flowers and hearts and shit like that. And, you know, like bows. Remember when bows everything?
Bows everywhere.
That was a part of Twee style. And apparently, Twee style is coming back in the year 2022. Like, there are a lot of articles on the internet right now about how Twee style is on its way back in.
Okay, have you been saving all your cardigans that have bows and little, like, cartoon apples on them?
If I ever see another bow again on anything in my closet, I'm absolutely going to vomit, because sometimes I take my clothes out from that time period and I go, did I think I was a toddler?
I know, but like, I don't know, there's something comforting. It makes you feel like, it makes you feel comforted, because I think it makes you nostalgic.
I do like very thin bows in women's hair. Is that stupid?
No,
you're,
I mean,
to tell me it's,
they're
stupid.
Classic. Bows have been around for a while. I like it if it's green and wrapped around my neck and makes people think my head's going to fall off if I remove it.
You weren't really into Twee style. That wasn't your thing, right?
No, that wasn't really my thing. I've never been, I don't know. I've always had such a hard time getting rid of old clothing,
yeah,
and struggling to get rid of it, that I never am able to fully adopt a new style because I'm stuck with all of the clothing I hate but don't want to get rid of.
I'm afraid if I adapt Twee again in this new resurrection that I'm going to be like my best friend's mother-in-law who showed up to her baby shower in a mesh see-through tank with a fluorescent pink bra underneath.
Oh, no.
And everybody's just like, oh, no. Did you shop at the junior section again?
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be that person for sure, because I really, no. I like a very specific style. And I don't ever want to get rid of it.
No. Yeah, but you're never like too trendy like that. You lean towards classic than you do trendy.
That's good to hear.
Okay.
Because I do love a bell bottom.
Let's talk about The Radical History and Psychology of Turtlenecks by Aubrey Stanton.
Wow, is a book.
From thegoodtrade.com. So Audrey Stanton, Bethany, digging deep into the psychology of turtlenecks, she says, garments that feel modest and sexy all at the same time are a symbol of strength, rebellion, and style. Yeah, so these, I mean, when I asked you in section one what came to mind when you thought about turtlenecks, you were like, power. I'm running a board meeting.
Yeah.
So that, in modern day times, that is what turtlenecks mean. When someone sees you, that is what you symbolize.
I am in charge of my life.
Yes.
I am powerful. I'm wearing a red lip.
Uh-huh.
I have created and defrauded people of millions of dollars by quote unquote inventing a blood testing machine that does not actually work. Mm. And you know what? I am getting a lot of people to sign on for my company because I look powerful in my black turtleneck.
And you will be convicted of defrauding investors, but not defrauding the American public.
Look, always comes back to money. What did I say? Comes back to money.
So Audrey Hepburn and Funny Face, she wore loafers with black pants, black turtleneck. She had those like thick white socks on with her loafers. And she did that dance at the club in Paris. And that was very iconic for turtlenecks. But also, the less talked about, but like unbelievably sexy, Jane Mansfield. Bethany, Google Jane Mansfield in a turtleneck right now, and I'm going to tell you, your loins are going to feel the champagne tickle.
Kathleen, I have so much to do today. I can't afford to get that turned on. Jane Mansfield.
Turtleneck. Specifically, there are a handful of images of her in a red turtleneck. It's like a mock neck. Oh my God. It is the sexiest image of a woman.
Oh my goodness.
In a turtleneck that I have ever seen in my life.
My goodness gracious.
So if you're listening to this, pause the pod, Google that, and then come back, because you're going to have to find a lover or a partner, because you're going to need your needs taken care of right away.
That was when women wore those torpedo bras.
Yeah.
Her boobs are real pointy.
Jane Mansfield, a.k.a. mom to Olivia Benson, a.k.a.
Yeah.
Mariska Hargitay.
Hargitay.
And then in the 70s, turtlenecks became this like political icon. Feminists like Gloria Steinem wore turtlenecks. And then the Black Panthers, they also too wore turtlenecks. And it provided a style that was like uniform, but unique all at the same time.
And again, pulled together and professional. You are fighting for something. And it's like, It's this interesting, non-threatening, and yet very intimidating look.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And then in the 80s and 90s, turtlenecks were kind of on the uncool side. Like, all I can think about turtlenecks in the 90s is Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah, with his gold chain.
Oh, God.
And his fanny pack.
most god-awful photo you've ever seen.
But dude, he's looking at the camera like, you know you want this. And guess what? We all want that.
So for the year 2022, gentle listeners, I invite you to maybe bring some turtlenecks into your life. And I want to just leave us off with some style advice from GQ.com about how men specifically can work turtlenecks into their wardrobe.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like an intellectual, get yourself a rich black cashmere turtleneck, pair it with all black everything else, including glasses. Your best options are slim black jeans and black lace-up dress shoes.
If there's anything we learned from this weekend's fashion show where Kyle MacLachlan and Jeff Goldblum walked the runway, it's that we love a man in all black.
GQ also says that if you would like to appear like you have detective style, wear a turtleneck that's very thick, navy blue, and wear it with wool trousers. Pair it with desert boots.
What is a desert boot?
Desert boot is that sort of like raw looking leather that's very flat but laces up. It comes up a little bit.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can picture that.
My favorite, the folk singer, where you layer it underneath like a blazer and a jacket and a cardigan. Yep. So there's multiple layers. That's how
I love that.
That's how I like a guy in a turtleneck like that. And finally, Bethany, your boyfriend, Dennis, this is his genre of style. This is how you wear a turtleneck like a dandy. And dandy, I didn't realize this is just a well-dressed man who wears a suit in an everyday kind of way.
That, well, Dennis would do that. I would say he's a gothic dandy if he's a dandy. Because he does have a metallic crow's skull that he wears around his neck regularly.
Well, men, or I don't know, humans, anybody who wants to wear a turtleneck like a dandy, substitute your old boring dress shirt for a turtleneck and then make sure it's jewel-toned and add some jewelry accessories and, like,
absolutely,
you know, like a finely knit turtleneck instead of one made from jersey cotton.
You too can be eminently sexy, powerful, and intimidating in your day-to-day life.
Like a dandy.
So, Kathleen, over the weekend, we finished shooting some pickup shots for Doors, which is the short film we're doing. And in the movie, I'm wearing these jeans that in real life are incredibly uncomfortable and I hate, but they were the only jeans that really worked for what we were doing. So I spent the whole weekend wearing my Honey Love shapewear underneath my outfit, and it was so comfortable. I have never worn shapewear as comfortable as Honey Love, and I will never wear anything else.
And the thing I love most about Honey Love shapewear is that it makes me feel more confident underneath my clothes, because I have some garments that I love to wear, but every now and then I'm like, oh, you know, my belly is pouching out a little bit, and I love my body the way that it is, but sometimes I just want to feel tucked in. And that's why Honey Love has become a staple in my closet.
Unlike your grandma's girdle, which was made out of wheat, Honey Love is made from premium materials and constructed with a signature X that targets and sculpts your midsection without squeezing your natural curves. The thing I love about it the most is that I've tried shapewear that like goes down the thigh or stops at the hip, and then wherever it stops, it digs into your skin. I don't know how Honey Love does it, but it doesn't do that. I have a piece that stops at the hip and it just feels like I'm wearing normal underwear.
Yeah.
But yet this is underwear that just sort of smooths everything out and makes me feel really good.
Well, I have the Super Power short, and a lot of times the same thing happens when the short comes halfway down your leg. There's like this weird bulge in your thigh.
Yeah.
But not with Honey Love. I could wear it under pants, under dresses. It smooths me out and I'm like, oh, look at this girl. You looking hot today.
So see for yourself at honeylove.com and get 20% off a second item. Plus, when you use the code TASTE, you will get an additional 10% off your entire order.
Get 20% off of your second item, plus an additional 10% off at honeylove.com with the code TASTE.
Honeylove.com, code TASTE. Rules and restrictions may apply. Kathleen, I love my smile, even though my teeth are made of styrofoam. My teeth are beautiful and I love them. What I want to do is make sure that I am using the best products and the safest products to keep my teeth from disintegrating further in the future.
Oral health is important for your whole body, and my oral health is really important to me.
Yeah, and that's why we love Lumino. We're so excited to try them. They make toothpaste, mouthwash, and whitening products that actually help your oral health instead of, you know, throwing things into your body that you're not entirely sure what they are.
They use purposeful and uncompromising ingredients like sea salt, aloe, and coconut oils to clean and brighten your smile. All of their products are made with natural ingredients.
Everything they make is dentist formulated, backed by over 50 studies, and proven to protect the good bacteria in your smile, also known as the microbiome. You do have bacteria in your mouth you want to keep in there.
And I'm really excited to try their whitening strips because the Lumino whitening strips are super effective and perfect for sensitive teeth like mine. And it only takes 30 minutes to apply and you'll see results in 7 days.
So get 15% off of your order today by going to getlumino.com/taste and using the code taste.
That's getlumino.com, and I'm going to spell that for you, getlumineux.com/taste, code taste, to save 15%.
getlumino.com/taste. Kathleen, this is such a crazy story. I am going to do my best to keep my segment to 20 minutes because that's our goal time always.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to keep like a really hard eye on the time, but please know that I'm keeping a lot out of this story.
Bethany, if the art is flowing out of you, just let it flow. You don't worry about father time at all. Okay.
Okay. Kathleen, here's what we need to know.
Okay.
Laying the groundwork. In the 1970s, mm-hmm. Kathleen, the BBC mm-hmm. launched their computer literacy project. This goal was to introduce people to computers
yeah.
and help them learn how to use computers.
Okay.
And so as part of this, they rolled out a computer called the BBC Micro. It was this rugged beige computer that British kids from the 80s and 90s seem to look back on with a lot of fondness because it's how they learned computers.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a TV show that went along with this that taught you how to use the BBC Micro. And ooh. So this computer was known as the Beeb.
Oh, like you.
Like me. This computer, Kathleen, is a central role of this story, okay?
Okay.
Okay, here's the other thing you need to know before we go into this story.
Okay.
Just a reminder that this was pre-internet. So every computer was a closed system. Anything that happened on the computer happened because the program was installed into the computer.
Like Oregon Trail.
Like Oregon Trail. You had to have the game Oregon Trail plugged into your computer. You could not source it from outside. Every call is coming from inside the house.
Is this the computer where the British kids, where their teachers would put the keyboard in front of them and put the big piece of felt over their hands and they would have to type as fast as they could?
Yeah, totally. You can't look at your fingers. Yeah, exactly. So this is the setting we're in.
Okay.
The year is fall of 1984.
Oh.
And we are in the village of Doddleston near the English border with Wales.
Okay.
And our central character is Ken Webster.
Of course it's Ken Webster.
Yeah. Ken Webster lives in an 18th century cottage in the middle of the village, and he has two roommates. He lives with his girlfriend, Debbie, and his friend, Nicola. Now, Ken's a teacher, and his school was part of this BBC computer literacy project, so he had access to a bunch of BBC micros. He brings one home.
Yeah.
And the reasons for him bringing it home vary from telling to telling. Some sources say that it was because he wanted to familiarize himself with the computer.
Yeah.
Some sources say that his roommate, Nicola, wanted to do a English performance project that he needed to write out. But a third source says that Nicola wanted to write comedy sketches. And so that is what I choose to believe, is that he wanted to write some comedy.
You know, once I did that from work, we had a long winter break and I literally took my desktop computer home. And because I didn't have the proper box or anything, I was like, this was definitely a mistake. Like, totally. I don't know why I did this. I was walking out of the building. Everybody thought I was stealing work stuff.
Fully. You had to use a huge box to carry a desktop home. It was nuts. Okay. So like you do when you live in a tiny village in a cottage, you go to the pub a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so one night, all of the roommates went to the pub. And when they came home, the computer was on and they found a mystery file saved in the computer's basic word processor.
What?
It read the following. Ken, Deb, Nick. True are the nightmares of a person that fears. Safe are the bodies of the silent world. Turn, pretty flower, turn toward the sun, for you shall grow and snow. And it continues on in a sort of just like weird poetic whatever, whatever.
Wow, interesting. Grow and snow.
Yeah, look at that.
Set has rhyming words.
Totally, they rhyme.
A little artistic liberties there.
So, what would you think, Kathleen, if everyone in your house went out for a drink and you come home and there is something typed on your computer which has no access to the outside world?
I would think, who put shrooms in our beers?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
yeah.
Drugs. They assumed it was a prank, which is kind of like what you would do. This would also be a good time to note that Ken had a buddy named John,
yeah,
who would occasionally come over to record some sweet, sweet guitar tracks.
On the computer?
I don't know. I think just in general, but John apparently had access to the house.
Okay. Doesn't everybody have a friend named John like that who always has access to your house?
That's literally what I wrote. I said, we all have a friend like John. So they all assumed it was a prank, and back to school the computer went.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now, February of 1985, so just a few months later, Ken brings another BBC Micro back home and leaves it on. They go out to drink.
Yeah.
Again, a mystery file shows up in the word processor, and it is written in all caps, as all of these are, because lowercase apparently was not an option, and it is written in some type of old English. And here is what it says. I'm going to read it as though it's screaming because it's in all capitals.
Okay, okay, okay.
Okay. What strange words thou speak, although I must confess that I hath also been ill-schooled. Sometimes methinks altercations are somewhat baffle, for they break many a sleeps in mine bed. Thou art goodly man who hath fanciful woman who dwell in mine home. I hath not want to affray for online since mine half-witted antic has ripped a twain mind bound hath been wreathed. I hath seen many altercations. Lastly, charge house in thine home. 'Tis a fitting place with lights which devil maketh and costly things that online only mine friend Edmund Grey can afford or the king himself. 'Twas a great crime to have bribed mine house. L.W.
Bethany, first of all, if someone is faking it, that was amazing. It took quite a lot of attention to detail to write that in old-timey English.
Yeah. So the spelling is all over the place. And from this letter, basically, it sounded like LW thought someone had stolen his house or that his house was haunted.
And he didn't like the light switch devil.
Yeah, exactly. And it could be argued that both thought the other was a ghost. So like the roommates thought LW was a ghost. LW thought that the roommates were a ghost. So what do, Kathleen, if you're Ken, if you're a teacher, you talk to your teacher friends, right?
Yeah. Okay. I have a question to ask you.
Sure.
Is it the same computer that he's bringing home every time?
No. 'Tis a different computer from what I can tell.
So that means that there's a portal in the house.
Kathleen, this is a theory.
I mean, there's a portal in the house. The computer is the catalyst. I'm not a scientist, but that's my theory.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ken's teacher buddies mostly thought that he was being pranked or even that someone had broken into his house and instead of stealing stuff, decided to open the word processor and type a letter in old English just for the lulls of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But one person suggested that, hey, Ken, why don't you respond? So Ken and his roommates opened up the word processor and they decided to write back.
Oh, my God.
And what they wrote was a bunch of questions. They said, in the reign of Queen Elizabeth II, which they were in, I guess we still are, dear LW, thank you for your message. We are sorry for disturbing you. What would you like us to do? Did you live in a house on this land in about 1620? Do you want us to tell you about our time? Then they asked, like, why did you write this as a poem? Who's Edward Grey? You know, is King James or Charles Stuart? You know, who's your king? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then he wrote back. They go to the pub. He wrote back.
Get the fuck out of here.
It's so crazy. So then he was like, he explains his house. He says, thank you for telling me about your time. Do you have a horse? He says that it's King Henry VIII is the king right now, who's 46.
Huh.
And then he said that it was the 28th of March, 1521.
That's so long ago.
So long ago, Kathleen. So the main issue here, besides the fact that a Renaissance festival-loving burglar was likely hiding in their walls. Okay, so let's assume they're talking with an actual guy from the 16th century. Here's the problem.
I'm going to believe that they are. I'm going to choose to believe that they are.
Sure.
Yeah.
Assuming that they are, his historical references were wrong.
Oh, shit.
So in the year 1521, Henry VIII was only 30, not 46. That's one of the inconsistencies here.
Okay.
But Ken is like nervous to offend whoever this is that they're not talking with on the computer.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, wasn't 1984 the year the Poltergeist came out? What year did that movie come out?
Oh, that's a good question. Wait a minute. Right? That's a great question.
Ken might be very duly influenced by talking to an outer world being through something that's shaped like a television.
Kathleen, you are very astute. So Poltergeist came out in 1982.
Okay, there you go.
And this was 3 years later. So Poltergeists are like in the zeitgeist. People are sort of super familiar with them.
Yeah.
Okay, so he didn't really want to offend, so he didn't push back on the Henry VIII thing. But now he keeps borrowing the school computer.
Oh.
So what follows is a series of about 150 back and forths.
150?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing. If their prankster friend John, who likes to bang on the drums and record some tracks at their apartment, it is my belief that eventually John would run out of steam for this prank. Like 150 back and forths is too many for it to be a prank.
Okay, let's take this prankster's running out of steam. Just put it over to the side for a moment.
Okay.
Just put a pin in that. We'll come back to that in a second. So over the next interactions, we learn that LW lived in a redstone house.
Yeah.
That he plans to visit a friend named Richard Wishall. He gives some facts about barley. He also...
Barley, that's so random. What about pharaoh?
I know, right?
Quinoa?
He never talks about any of the other ancient grains.
Mm. Yeah.
He's a real ancient grain elitist. He becomes a little bit more comfortable with his pen pals. And so now he says that the letters LW stand for Lucas, later Lucas Wyman.
Well, okay.
And with this info that they have about the house now, they can look and see that it looks like the house they live in is the house that Lucas lived in.
Are you kidding me?
So they're like in the same house as this guy from the 16th century who they're communicating with, again, on a BBC microcomputer.
Did they go to the stacks at the local library? How'd they find that out?
Okay, so he says he lived in like this red brick house. They start like digging around their own house and they find red brick remnants around their kitchen. And they're like, same house.
Yeah, probably was covered up by something.
Yeah. Kathleen, here's where the story gets weirder.
Okay.
This is the equivalent, Kathleen. Do you remember on The Office where Creed thought he had a blog, but really it was just a Microsoft Word page?
Yes.
So this is the equivalent if Creed was just typing on his quote unquote blog and it was communicating with the past. All right.
I'm so excited. Bethany, it's a beautiful thing.
This is great. So Ken tells Lucas that he lives in 1985.
Okay.
Lucas responds, "You said your time be 1985. Methought you were also from 2109, like your friend, whom didst bring Leem's boist prey."
What? What's boist prey?
Leem's boist prey apparently means the light box or the computer, is what Ken believed.
Oh.
So Lucas seems to be talking to someone else who was from the year 2109 and was the person who brought him the computer.
What?
Okay.
What?
So, Ken, who I imagine at this point has not slept in weeks and is looking nuts, types into his word processor.
Yeah.
Calling 2109. And Kathleen, he gets a response.
Get out of here.
We are all having the best time.
Oh my God.
Okay. So 2109 responds.
Okay.
Ken, Deb, Peter. Because did I mention at this point Nick had moved out? Can't imagine why.
Oh, okay. Okay,
so
okay.
So Nick is gone. So Peter's back. Peter's here.
Okay.
We are sorry we cannot give you only two choices. One, that you either have your predicament explained in such a non-rhyme way that you may have instant understanding, but cause what should not happen. Or two, try to understand that you three have a purpose that shall, in your lifetime, change the face of history.
Oh my God.
We, 2109, must not affect your thoughts directly, but give you some sort of guidance that will allow room for your own destiny. All we can say is that we are all part of the same God, whatever he is, it is. So this was from the future. So all three of these roommates apparently have a big purpose.
Okay, I'm surprised that the future didn't use like the pronoun they.
No, good point, right? Good point. Kathleen, this is when the poltergeist activity begins. Tin cans stack themselves up. The sound of walking would be heard around the house. Chalk markings show up, sometimes as words. Strange six-toed footprints would show up, scaling the walls and onto the ceiling. And if Ken painted over the footprints, they showed back up the next day.
Oh my God. So Ken needs to start archiving all this stuff, and then he needs to get in touch with his friend Lucas and ask Lucas how to tame the beast.
How do you, what are we, what's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
Debbie once came into the cottage to feed the cats.
Yeah.
She found the cats sitting up on the garden wall, not rubbing up against her ankles like they normally did. And when she came into the living room, Kathleen, she found the furniture stacked up 6 feet high.
What?
Here's where I want to mention that I got a lot of this from an amazing YouTube video from the account Nostalgia Nerd.
Okay.
And at this point, his video shows footage of a woman sobbing over a lap full of cats, which is maybe the most realistic part of this entire story. Okay.
I mean, is it really sobbing if you don't have a lap full of cats is the question.
And are you really a cat owner if you haven't sobbed over all of your cats at one point or another?
Feel what I'm feeling, you feline.
Okay. The sun is now streaming directly into my eye and it's giving me much blindness. So please hold while I close my curtains.
Much
blindness. For mine eyes are having a hard time seeing. So then Debbie apparently did some research. She discovered that the cottage they lived in was apparently on some ley lines, which are like energy power grids of the earth. She also said she started getting visions and dreams of Lucas. I think they were sexy dreams, but that is not confirmed. But Debbie's really being whipped up into a frenzy here. Kathleen.
Yeah.
If you believe that you are being spoken to by two beings, one from the past, one from the future, and you're getting poltergeist activity in your house, what would you do?
Ooh, well, okay. I would talk to the person from the future and be like, what number iPhone are you on?
Because, prove yourself.
Prove yourself. Like, if you say the 10, I know you're lying because... Like, we've already had the 10 here. Yeah. We're on to the 13.
Yeah.
But if they're at the, like, 131, I'd be like, oh, my God, Apple is so rich. Let me buy stock now, even though it's still expensive now.
Yeah.
From the past, I would ask, man, I don't know. What would you ask the past?
I don't know if I would ask much of the past because in the 16th century, you know, your knowledge of what's going on is limited to your village, really. Yeah. And so you can't ask a lot of knowledge questions about the time period because what you may have access to might not be the same information they have access to, and we might not know like village info. Here's what Ken did, and I think that this is smart. He reached out to the Society for Psychical Research. This is a famous paranormal investigation agency. They come up in a lot of ghost stories, like famous, especially in the UK, famous haunted house stories. A lot of times we hear about the SPR.
Okay.
So two reps show up at the house. Their names are Dave and John. They propose a test, which is smart. They would type 10 questions onto the BBC Micro with all of the roommates out of the room. They would then delete those questions. If the answers showed up, Ken was to notify the SPR immediately. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
So after several days, the response shows up. And it's bitchy.
Oh, shit.
It says, David, John, David, you interfere with communication. Next time you decide to perform your little experiment, you must be clear from here. We suggest you try someone else to sit with Debbie. No. And then they continue on. And essentially, they address every single question that was asked, but they don't actually answer it.
Oh.
But they address every question in order. The roommates hoped that this would eliminate them as suspects in a hoax.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But instead, the SPR just kind of went quiet. And they said, like, maybe you guys had a really high-powered microphone and were listening to us clacking on the computer. And maybe you were able to tell. Or they said maybe an earth wire was tapped that was used for electricity, but was somehow used to send and receive messages.
What? Get out of here. Yeah. I don't even know what an earth wire is. What's that old-timey bullshit?
I don't know. I put it in quotes because also I don't know what it is. the SPR never filed a report on this. John left the SPR shortly thereafter, and Dave just disappeared without a trace.
Are you kidding me?
Okay, so I am now at 23 minutes. I'm going to speed through the rest of this. Okay.
Okay.
Are we okay? Are you bored?
Bethany, I have to know about the iPhone in the future.
Okay. So for the rest of these, there's so much going on. So Lucas also admitted he had given a fake name and fake details earlier. He didn't trust them. He said his true name was Thomas Harden. And this name does show up. He said which college he went to. This shows up in Brasenose College's list of fellows. It's like a real name that a real guy had.
Oh.
There's also so much more. So there's something involving the Pope, green lights in a chimney. And then 2109 randomly tells the roommates to reach out to a guy named Gary. And then Gary was writing directly to 2109 back and forth and then didn't want to talk about it. Then Gary disappears.
What?
It sort of seems like 2109 used Ken to get to Gary and then they were just gossiping back and forth. It's like, okay, so here's what happened at the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thomas, previously Lucas, the guy from the past, promises that he's going to write a book about the whole Dog and Pony Show. He promised he wouldn't die until he had written it. And he signed it with "My love to you all." He said that he was being hunted by his neighbors who were accusing him of witchcraft and were threatening to burn his house down and kill him because of his computer and that he was communicating. So that was the last time they spoke with him, was March 21st, 1985. They never heard from him again. 2109 confirmed that Thomas did write his book and hid it. And that, if we were to find that book, which is probably somewhere on the Oxford campus, it would prove everything.
Oh my God.
Ken wrote this story,
this occurrence,
into a book called The Vertical Plane, which is incredibly rare, Kathleen. There are 4 copies on eBay right now. The cheapest one is a starting bid of $342.
Jeez.
2 of the listings are in the 700s. Last night, I offered one person $130 and was immediately rejected. They are expensive and rare.
Yeah, Ken Webster, The Vertical Plane.
If anyone has one lying around and is looking to, I don't know, gift it to your favorite podcaster, give me a call.
The Vertical Plane is a riveting personal experience of an inexplicable fault in the fabric of time.
Mm-hmm. They did a TV special where one expert in Old English said that Lucas/Thomas's language was not great, mixed up his doths and does. Other verbs, wasn't accurate, and was likely a bad hoax. The nostalgia nerd who did the YouTube video believes that 2109 conveniently showed up at just the right time to help explain some historical inaccuracies.
Huh.
Because 2109 claimed to have changed some of Lucas's messages to make them more easily understandable, which is maybe explaining some of the bad grammar. Nostalgia Nerd said, quote, 2109's spelling is wildly inconsistent, so it makes it feel like a poorly thought out hoax. In fact, from the point they enter, the vibe given off is that the orchestrator of this whole campaign becomes overwhelmed with the task, leaving too many loose threads. It's like watching Lost all over again.
Oh.
So he believes, this YouTuber believes that it was a hoax that got like out of control.
Like watching Lost all over again. Exactly. Lost is a masterpiece. You shut your face, YouTuber.
So Kathleen, the theories are either Debbie did it because she was home alone a lot when a lot of these messages came out. Some people believe that it was a time slip. Some people believe that a poltergeist was doing the typing. But if commenters on an article about this story from the website ozy.com have anything to say, it's a lot of bull dust, says one. And one person says, we don't know anything about time portals because they aren't real and nothing of this is plausible at all. So this is basically most likely a hoax. But if it's not, this BBC computer was able to communicate both with a 16th century villager and also a collective of people from the year 2109 in a way that is not satisfying but is fascinating and continues to baffle people to this day.
A little part of me now wants to go into a hole for the rest of the day,
read
up on the fabric of time, and then also try and communicate with somebody from the future and from the past.
If you look up, so this case is also known as the Doddleston letters because Doddleston was the name of the village they lived in.
Okay.
If you look that up, this story is crazy. Not a lot of people know about it, but enough people know about it that it is a wormhole you can happily fall into. And it's just wild. And it makes me nostalgic for really old computers. Like old computers seem to be just good, sturdy hardware.
Like, Bethany, I don't know about that because I was writing a thriller story when I was in fifth grade about this mom and this daughter running from the abusive ex-boyfriend. And after five pages, my dad's word processor was like, out of memory.
Oh, no.
Five pages. It's all it was. out of memory.
But man, those five pages were riveting.
They were so riveting, Bethany, that my my writing teacher had to ask me if everything was okay at home. So the other day, I was in Whole Foods walking down the soaps aisle. You know that aisle, right, Bethany?
Love that aisle.
They have a whole case of Thrive Cosmetics set up, and there is this woman looking at them. I walked over. I was like, you have to get the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It's my favorite thing. It's good for a smoky eye. If you get the brown color, if you get the lighter one, it makes you look more awake. You have to get it. And this woman was like, who is this monster? She walked away from me like I had two heads. But by golly, Bethany, she had that dang Brilliant Eye Brightener in her hand.
I, too, am obsessed with Thrive Cosmetics Brilliant Eye Brightener. I have it in like the light pink color. I put it in the waterline of my eye when, yes, I need to look like I'm awake or I actually got some sleep. I also love their mascara. They have such great products. And that is because they are high performance beauty and skincare products made with skin loving ingredients. They're 100% vegan. They're cruelty-free. They put the name Cause in cosmetics for a reason.
Get it? Cosmetics instead of cosmetics?
Yeah. Every purchase supports organizations that help women thrive.
Bethany, like you said, their mascara, when I put it on my face, it's like my lashes can reach up and touch the moon.
And if you're like me and you're always looking at your under eyes and going, oh, I did so much damage. What can I do? They have their Defying Gravity Eye Lifting Cream. It instantly lifts, tightens, and brightens the skin around your eyes. Plus, it softens, soothes, and deeply moisturizes your skin while instantly reducing the look of dark circles and puffiness.
And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help women emerging from homelessness, surviving domestic abuse, fighting cancer, and more.
Now is a great time to try Thrive Cosmetics for yourself without Kathleen yelling at you inside a Whole Foods. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order when you visit thrivecosmetics.com/taste.
Thrive, CAUSEMETICS.com/taste for 15% off of your first order.
Kathleen, I have to go to the bathroom so badly, but I can't because I don't have any toilet paper.
What? Wait, you don't have any toilet paper in your whole house?
No, because I thought I had enough and I got cocky. And so I didn't order any with my latest grocery order. But here's the problem. Anytime I'm cocky about the number of supplies I have, I'm always out.
You're understaffed.
And my throat is making weird noises. Dennis, cut those all out.
Bethany, it's okay. Bethany, have you been gurgling again?
Gross. That's disgusting.
No, you're right.
Who
that is
gargles it?
Bethany, that, I don't know why I said that. I'm in a weird mood and that is foul. Dennis, cut this all out.
Cut this all out.
Nope.
So here's the thing. And also because we're podcasting, I'm chugging fluids because your mouth gets dry when you perform and we are performers. And so I have to go to the bathroom, but I used all of my paper towels up, ruining the septic system for New York.
Yeah.
And I'm about to move on to decorative napkins.
But you can't flush those. You're going to have to wash them like that guy in that documentary where he didn't have any waste for a whole year.
Is it
one or two? Is it number one or number two?
Oh, it's simply number one. I'm a lady. I don't do number two.
No, you do number two. I know you eat cheese, so don't deny.
So now I'm looking around my apartment for what I can use that's in any way absorbent. This is where anyone who has a penis is so lucky.
So lucky because you can shake.
You can just, you don't have to worry about it. You use so much less toilet paper.
This is what I do when I need a rag and I'm out of rags. I look around in my collection of t-shirts and I'm like, which of you do I like the least?
Which of you can I cut up and clean my house with?
And you know what? It's funny. I'm always like, oh man, I'm going to regret this. I'm going to miss this t-shirt. And then I have no recollection 3 days later of what t-shirt I even cut up.
No, I know. I know. It's like when I haven't done laundry in a long time, but I don't remember what clothes aren't clean because I just don't remember I even have them. And then when they get cleaned, it's like Christmas. It's like, oh, look at you, new clothes.
You know, I put both dirty clothes and clean clothes in the hamper because, you know, sometimes when you do a little laundry, you take it out, you fold it up, you put it back in the hamper. But then if you wait long enough to put the clean clothes away, you then start suspecting that they're dirty. And it's really hard to tell sometimes whether anything is clean or dirty.
You have clothes that are clean that have been cleaned so many times.
And I've never worn them.
Yeah, and you've never worn them. Yeah, I went when we were shooting this weekend and we had to empty out my closet, my like office closet, and make it look super empty. And so all of my clothes had to be hidden because we were also shooting in the rest of the apartment.
Oh.
I'm like, how do I have so many clothes in my archive that I have never worn and I'm saving them for some sort of event that's never going to happen. And yet I can't get rid of them, but I can't wear them because they don't fit me perfectly. But I don't want to get rid of them because they're awesome, but I can't wear them. And it's just this vicious cycle.
So, you know, what are those shoes? Saddle shoes. You know what saddle shoes look like? The 1950s, the black and white saddle shoes.
Okay. They kind of look like cows.
Yeah, they do. They kind of look like cows. So I have a pair of those, but where the white leather is supposed to be, it's clear plastic because Rachel Antonoff did a collection with Bass shoes in 2013. And Bethany, I don't like them. I don't even think I really like them when I was wearing them. I thought it was kind of cool you could see the color of my tights through the clear plastic of the shoe. But then ultimately, I'd always get some perspiration inside the shoe, some like buildup of moisture because I was sweating in plastic shoes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I still have them. And I'm like, I don't want to get rid of these. I picked them up and the plastic broke on one of them. Like I put my finger right through it by accident and I still put it back in my closet. And I was like, nope, not getting rid of these. Like, what is wrong with me?
It's like this thing where in theory, they are so darling. In practice, they are completely unwearable and you even broke it. Like that for me is the moment to get rid of them because it's a nice excuse to get rid of them.
Yeah.
But like I remember just not too long ago, there was this trend of people like the Kardashians and the Hadids wearing completely like PVC see-through heels.
Yes.
And you could always see their toes just smooshed into the front of the shoe, which is a dirty little secret anyone who wears high heels knows. Your toes are smooshed into the front.
Yeah.
But we don't want people to see that.
Yeah, I know.
You don't want people to see your it looks like you have 6, 7, 8 toes smooshed into the front of your shoe.
Or when people wear plastic sandals where the straps are clear plastic, it's just your skin like totally pressed pressed in and it's all smushed, like someone's putting their cheek to a window and blowing a raspberry. I'm like, this is not attractive. Why is everybody wearing these?
Yes. Or when you are wearing flip-flops, which you know I do not like, or any sandal, and like you take them off for any reason, and the imprint of your sweaty foot has changed the color of the bottom of the shoe. It's embarrassing. It's disgusting.
It looks like your foot's still in the shoe.
It does. It's totally visible. I remember once I was watching this episode of Oprah. This was so long ago. And they had on, who was the lead actress from CSI? She was a ginger, beautiful woman.
I don't know. I can't remember tell either.
She was great. They were talking about technology used on the show CSI, and they had her sit in a chair and then stand up, and they were going to show, you know, like with thermal imaging, the impression she left behind. And she stood up and they pointed the thermal camera at the chair, and it perfectly outlined her thighs and buttocks. Oh, and you could tell she got so uncomfortable. She was like, oh, wow, that's accurate. It's like her ass cheeks were on Oprah.
That is so uncomfortable. I never understood what was the appeal of sitting with pantsless on top of a photocopier and then taking a picture of your ass, because I would be so horrified. Who actually wants to see that angle of themselves?
And you know that you're the least, the least flattering version of you is the version that is shoved up against a flat surface and pressed really hard.
Listen, that is never going to be me. I never want to see that angle of my body. I never even want to see photos of myself.
No.
And then also this weekend, I learned, Bethany, that on Amazon, you can purchase a pants stretcher.
This is where we're at.
This is where I am at the point in my pandemic journey, because anytime I have to wear anything with a button that clasps, because I've been wearing yoga pants for 2 years straight, I can't do it. I'm like, literally my body feels like it's suffocating anytime there's a button closure. And so I went on Amazon and I'm like, do they make pants stretchers? Typed in pants stretchers. Sure enough, they do.
Sure they do. What is it? What does it do? How does it work?
Okay, so it's like a wooden contraption that you put in the waistband of your pants. It says that you can stretch from a waist of 30 to a waist of 59.
No way. Absolutely not.
You turn the crank and you get it as tight as it can on the pants. You turn the crank. You wait a couple days, turn the crank again. Wait a couple days, turn the crank again. It's like that palate expander that the orthodontist would put in the top of your mouth.
If you get it to a what, 59?
Yeah, it says you can stretch from a 30-inch waist on pants to a 59-inch waist.
I would hope then it also works to stretch the thighs out, because otherwise that's disproportionate.
Well, what if you have a disproportionate body? What if your body is a coupe glass and your waist is bigger than your thighs and you need a 59-inch waist, but your thighs are still, like, I don't know, an average 35? You know,
I feel like we need to get this waist stretcher just for the purposes of science, to see how much tension we can put on that poor button on the front of your jeans.
I know.
Just to stretch the living hell out of them.
I know. My poor dead father. I took some jeans from his closet to remember him by, but they're too small on me. So maybe I need to stretch out father's jeans.
Well, Kathleen, is that what you learned this week, that there is a pants stretcher on Amazon?
Yes, that is what I learned this week. Bethany, what did you learn this week?
I learned that taking selfies is more dangerous than sharks.
Please explain.
So there was research done by Carnegie Mellon University. I'm getting this from bestlifeonline.com, which is where I get all my hard-hitting news. In 2014, 15 people died mid-selfie. In 2015, 39. In 2016, 73 people died mid-selfie.
What? Is that because they're falling off of cliffs?
Yeah, from like falling off of cliffs, walking into open grinders. Walking through, I don't know, I made that one up, but you know what I'm saying. Like, let's take a picture by this oversized coffee grinder, and then you sort of back up to try to get the coffee grinder into the shot, and all of a sudden you're in it and you're dead.
I'm just picturing two very good dear friends taking a selfie because they haven't seen each other in 10 years, and then a piano falls out of the sky and kills them.
out of the sky, Kathleen. So to put that in perspective, in 2017, yeah. only 5 people died from shark attacks compared to the year before, 73 people died of selfies. So be careful when you're taking selfies.
Yeah, please make sure you're in a safe location, that you know how to get out. There's, you know, you're not trapped anywhere. Oh,
and you're aware of the world around you.
God. Oh my God. Well, people, where can people follow you on social media, Bethany?
You can get all of my whimsical musings on Radio Bethany on Twitter, Ms. Bethany Watson on Instagram. And also Dennis and I, of course, have a TikTok that we have not uploaded anything to. And we have over 100 followers now. So thank you for supporting Nothing. You can follow us on BBX Dennis on TikTok. Kathleen, what about you?
I'm Web Girl Kathleen on everything.
You can also find our show on social media on Twitter at Acquired Podcast.
On Facebook, Acquired Taste Podcast. Plus, make sure you check out the fan group.
On Instagram, Acquired Taste Podcast.
We have an electronic mail address, and that's anacquiredtastepodcast@gmail.com.
We have a physical address, an Acquired Taste Podcast, P.O. Box 1717, Hoboken, New Jersey, 07030.
Twice a month, we do live shows on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/acquiredtaste. Our next one is at 7:30 p.m. on January 26th. That is Wednesday.
Our show is edited by Dennis Callow. You can follow him on social media at Dennis CAHLO.
And at the end of every podcast, we play your voicemails, and you can get in touch with us via text or voicemail at 917-994-0353.
Thank you to people who have been rating and reviewing and subscribing. 5 stars is the best. We got some of the sweetest reviews this week. I want to just give a quick shout out to Gen X Jill on Apple Podcasts, Cannoli24 on Apple Podcasts. Was that your cat, Kathleen?
Okay, maybe my cat's leaving podcast reviews. That's cool. She's smart.
And also Morgan VA. They left such sweet messages and some reviews for us. So thank you, thank you, thank you for doing that. This is your weekly reminder to take a deep breath.
And taste buds, here's what you had to say this week.
Hi, girls. Hi, girls. Hi, girls. This is Belinda from Philadelphia. And I just had you say I am listening to your most recent podcast. And we are talking about technology from Kathleen's side of things. And I just had to say, thank God Bethany finally said what I have been thinking all this time, which is about technology trying to turn us into the Wally world people. I have been saying this since I watched Wally. I have been saying this for years. They are trying very slowly to turn us into Wally world. Thank you and good night.
Hey, ladies and fellow taste buds. This is Liana, Lenny in the podcast group. And I was just catching up on the podcast. And there was a voicemail from a South Floridian taste bud who said that she doesn't own a pair of socks. And I'm very confused because I wear socks all the time. Like, I'm one of those people that cannot be barefoot. Like, what absorbs your foot sweat? Like, what if your feet are sweaty and you're walking around and you're barefoot with no socks on and you slip? Like, I have so many questions. I don't understand. That's so bizarre to me. Anyway, I'm going to rack my brain and figure this out, try not to have an existential crisis, and enjoy my hibachi rice, which I got a nice whiff of when I took a deep breath. Bye.
Hi, Bethany and Kathleen. This is Katie from Michigan, and I love your podcast. Listen all the time. I just listened to the latest podcast where Kathleen was talking about getting bumped from behind in the car from some guy who got out of it by saying it was another guy, and, you know, he was a witness, and he could give her his information so he could, you know, be a witness to the whole thing. And it was really the guy who hit her. And I believe she said it was in a Tesla. Well, I kid you not, literally 2 minutes after I listened to that episode, I was driving and there was a guy behind me, right behind me, in a Tesla, a white Tesla, and he was drinking a protein shake. I kid you not, out of one of those giant protein shake type of bottles. And he was actually driving pretty close behind me. So I thought he might hit me, and I thought, wow, this is the universe coming and telling me that watch out for guys in Teslas, because apparently Kathleen, you know, survived her incident. So anyways, I thought I would share because I thought it was hilarious. But you ladies are awesome. I listen all the time. Love you.
Bye. Hi, it's Caitlin. Hope everyone's having a great Thanksgiving weekend. So I just want to do a little PSA. Yesterday, got the booster, the COVID booster, and they suggested like to drink plenty of water and get stuff like things with electrolytes, like Gatorade or Liquid IV. So I went to my local Walgreens and I got Liquid IV. And honestly, it's truly come in clutch. I think, like, I was definitely knocked out from the vaccine. So, like, December 3 is a doozy, but I think I was able to kind of feel good better. I have, like, a better experience. I don't know if that's even the right thing to say, because I was drinking Liquid IV religiously. I got the tangerine flavor, and it was absolutely delicious. So if you are planning on getting the booster, I would recommend having a bunch of those Liquid IVs in handy. I'm going to try to go to Costco tomorrow to get one of those big buckets or big containers of them. It was so good. I think I might be adding these into my everyday routine. So that's a real life person giving you a real life review.